The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
But then I also think it's important to just make sure that I'm helping create more diverse authors. And that's why it's so important to me to be able to teach other underrepresented, marginalized authors or aspiring authors, one, that they can actually publish a book, right? Yeah. And two, that they can be successful with it. And so I think that that fulfills a part of the pipeline, right? Like the front end of it. But on the back end, that's where we still have some difficulties. So the books are now being created, but how do we get those books sales? How do we teach people that these books are not just for Black children, that all children need to be exposed to books with characters that don't look like them?
Greetings, scribes, and welcome back to The Writer Files. I'm your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you prolificness, prosperity, and peace of mind per usual. Award-winning children's book author and diversity publishing pro Crystal Swain Bates spoke with me this week about what inspired her to launch her own publishing company and the challenges authors of color face. Crystal is a celebrated illustrated kids book author, entrepreneur, and indie publisher on a mission to positively reshape the way children of color all over the world see themselves. She's written and published 12 children's books, been featured by Forbes, Entrepreneur, Essence Magazine, HuffPost, and CNN, and her books have been used as props for hit TV shows on BET. Her lauded and best-selling book, Big Hair, Don't Care, is one of Amazon's most highly reviewed Black children's books. Crystal founded Goldest Carrot Publishing to address the lack of diversity she found in children's literature and aims to help aspiring and underrepresented authors publish their books and share their stories. She also speaks at conferences and events on the topics of diversity in children's literature, writing, and publishing. In this file, Crystal and I discussed how a former CIA intelligence analyst became a famed author, her promise to fill the diversity gap in children's literature, why she always starts with her titles first, self-publishing versus traditional publishing for illustrated kids' books, and how diversity in publishing and book retail can improve. Stay calm and write on. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am thrilled today to be joined by a very special guest. I have best-selling children's book author, Crystal Swain Bates. Where are you making your home base these days?
I live in Atlanta. I live in Hotlanta, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah. And how are things during the pandemic for you?
Oh, my goodness. You know, Atlanta never really closed. We never really shut down. Hmm. People are still partying. You know, restaurants are open, but I'm home every day, so I don't really know what's going on out there.
Well, we really do appreciate your time, expertise, and can't wait to dig into the subject matter on, your fantastic mission, this inspiring mission to fill this diversity gap in children's literature. So talk a little bit about your own superhero origin story and kind of how you came to this very inspiring undertaking and got into writing children's literature as well before the publishing piece, which we'll talk about also.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm one of those weird people that when I was a child, I actually wanted to be an author when I grew up. And, you know, most people never end up doing that thing that they love to do as a kid, but somehow I've ended up there. And I'll say that the way it happened is that just growing up, I really loved to read. Like, I absolutely loved to read. I blame my poor vision now for, you know, those nights I would read in bed in the dark with the flashlight when I was supposed to be sleeping. So I loved to read so much, and that led to a love of writing for me. So I used to write these short stories. I used to write books that I never thought that one day I would be able to publish. But it wasn't until I was quite older that I actually decided to pursue writing. And it's simply because I never knew that it was something that I could do full time. But another part of it is that I'd never really seen a Black author. And that might sound weird, but like at my school, authors would come, poets would come, and they would read their books. And I loved it. I was so inspired. But I never saw anyone who looked like me. So I never really thought about that as a career choice, which is actually really sad to me as I think about it now. But I never really thought it was something that was, you know, a possibility. So once I got older, I actually wrote a book and I didn't really know what to do with it. I tried to find an illustrator for it. That didn't quite work out. I had a very limited budget. And so I kind of set it to the side. But it was something that never left me. I knew that I really wanted to write and I wanted to write children's books. So in 2012, late 2012, I decided that I was going to leave my job, start a publishing company, and write 6 books in the first year.
Wow.
I had never published a book before. and you know, I just, for me, it's really good to set these huge goals and just kind of challenge myself to see if I can accomplish them. And I was really inspired to do this because my brother, he had just had a baby, and I was so excited. Oh, let me find some things for my niece. Let me find some books for her. And when I started looking for books, I couldn't believe the books that I saw. Like, the books were, they weren't fun books. They weren't books that I thought she would love to see and to read. You know, of the few books that I found that actually had a character at all that looked like her, they were sad books. You know, they were the books about slavery. They were the books about, you know, all of the really sad things that children don't necessarily, like, it's good for them to be exposed to, you know, at one point, but kids just want to be kids. And so I didn't see any of those fun books on the market. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to make it my mission to do this, to try to fill that gap in the market. And I can't believe where I've ended up now after deciding to do that.
Yeah, it's really inspiring to see an amazing journey. Now, I think you've published a dozen of your own books, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And you're helping other aspiring underrepresented authors to leverage their own self-publishing platforms, and you know, you're now an entrepreneur and doing all these different things. I mean, how do you keep up with all of the different projects?
Oh, it is a lot. And you know, honestly, 2020 was very difficult for me because I was just juggling way too many things. Yeah. And so, you know, this year I stopped doing some of the things that I was doing. So, you know, really what I focus on now is teaching other people how to do this. I spent some time before actually doing it for other people, but now I teach other people. Yeah. And I found, you know, so much freedom in that, just kind of that group rather than the one-on-one type of situation. But it truly is hard to balance. But because I absolutely love this and I'm so passionate about it, it doesn't feel like work. It never feels like work for me. So I think that's really important.
On finding a career that you truly love, it seems, you know, that the adage, you know, you'll never work a day in your life has really kind of come true for you. And of course, you've had great success. And of course, you retain creative control over all of your intellectual property, which is amazing. And also, you're making a difference in people's lives. It's gotta feel pretty satisfying at the end of the day.
It really does. I mean, it's so funny because I don't know if you know this, but I worked for the CIA as an intelligence analyst.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved that job. I mean, it was my dream job. And I never thought that I would be able to find something that would be as fulfilling. But honestly, for me, writing the children's books is even more fulfilling, and it's teaching others as well. And it's because I can directly see the impact. You know, I can, from the moment I meet a child and I show them one of my books and I see that look in their eyes and how excited they get, you know, I can see that impact. So it's incredibly fulfilling for me. Oh my goodness. I absolutely love what I do.
Amazing. Yeah. You've of course been featured on some very big stages. Talk a little bit about your best-selling book, Big Hair Don't Care, the inspiration behind it, because it's kind of tied into everything a little, you know, there's a little bit of everything you do in there, but yeah. And then we'll talk about kind of the challenges moving forward for authors of color and kind of that equity piece.
Absolutely. So Big Hair Don't Care. This is the first children's book that I published. And I came up with the idea, first of all, I write my titles first. So that's something that I think is a little bit backwards, but it's how I work best. So I come up with my titles first. I came up with that title because I knew that I wanted to write a book about hair. And I decided to do that because there were so many little girls who were getting suspended from school because of their hair, just for wearing their natural hair, the way it naturally grows out of their head. Yeah. They were getting suspended from school. And I really wanted to be able to show girls that their hair is perfectly fine, no matter, you know, how it looks, how it is. And no matter how big it is. And so that's where Big Hair Don't Care came from. And when I wrote that particular book, I truly did not know what the response would be, but I knew that I liked it. You know, I thought that it tackled so many of the areas because I have natural hair and I had natural hair at the time that I wrote this book. So, you know, my hair was big and it was blocking people's view, you know, at the movies. And so like, that's one of the lines, you know, blocks her people's view, like at the zoo and the kids were behind her, they're trying to see the animals. So it was, that made it very easy for me to write and to make it funny, but to also make it real. And I couldn't believe that once I published that book and I started getting reviews on Amazon, people were saying that their daughters were getting teased at school and that, you know, coming home crying, they found this book because they literally went searching for a book about hair to try to increase their child's self-esteem. They found my book, read it, and now when the kids were teasing them, the girls were like, "Oh, Big Hair Don't Care." Like that became their reply, you know? and to me, I mean, what better way to impact like an entire generation of children than to be able to instill that sense of self-confidence in them and to also be able to show other kids. Because my books aren't just for Black children, they're for everyone. Yeah. To be able to show other kids, hey, kids have hair that looks different from yours. Some kids have hair like this, some kids have hair like that. And so to me, it's so important. And I just can't believe that book has absolutely taken off in the way that it has.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about your journey with self-publishing and kind of, you know, that relationship with KDP or why, you know, why you chose that. Obviously, you touched on it a little bit, but why you chose self-publishing over traditional publishing at that juncture?
It's funny because I never even considered traditional publishing. And I think it's because I already saw the types of books that were on the bookshelves. I already saw the types of books that were being sold. And I don't like to have to sell myself to people. You know, I did some research into it and I saw, you know, that it could take me, you know, maybe 6 months to a year to even get a response from some of these companies. Right. And so I just said, you know what, there's a way to do this myself. And I always thought, hey, I can try this out. I can try self-publishing out. And if I don't like it, then I can try to seek, you know, a traditional deal later.
Yeah.
And I never did. But I started my own publishing company simply because I wanted the freedom to write the types of books that I didn't see being published. And I wanted my characters to look a very specific way. Mm-hmm. So I really needed to retain creative control over the work. I wanted to choose my own illustrators. I wanted to be able to decide how their facial features looked for the characters and their hairstyles, their skin tone. How light or dark were they? I wanted to be able to choose their names, you know, and it's like tiny little things, but it's like that type of nuance that for me is very necessary, and it makes the characters seem more real to me. So that's how I decided to self-publish. And I didn't know anything about KDP initially. So I just started, you know, doing what we all do when we're looking for information. We go online. I started looking around for information about self-publishing. And I came across KDP. It seemed, well, at the time it was CreateSpace. It seemed too good to be true. You know, it's a free platform. You know, you just get your files and upload them. So I said, all right, I'll just test it out. And here we are so many years later, I've still been using them.
Amazing. Well, you're now an award-winning children's book author, diversity publishing pro, and a thought leader and influencer in the publishing space who speaks all over, you know, all over the country on this subject. So let's talk about the future of publishing and then the challenges that Black authors face, not only in traditional, but just in general, but also, how we can improve the diversity in publishing.
Yeah, there's, you know, I feel like we've come so far, but then, you know, we still have quite a ways to go. So one of the things I've noticed, and it's made selling children's books, selling books with Black characters very difficult, is that all books that do not have a white character as the main character kind of get put into this pile, this category that's just called like diversity books, right? So already they're being, as I call it, segregated, right? Like the bookstores are segregated. So are the libraries. Like if you go into a bookstore, you're going to see, you know, under fiction, for the most part, you'll see white authors, but for any category, but if you want to find a Black author, you have to find the ethnic section or the African American section. And that in and of itself makes things so difficult because no one goes to that section except Black people or people who are searching for a book specifically because it is Black History Month. So that's one month out of the year. And that to me is a huge concern because by sectioning off the bookstore, that really perpetuates that notion that white readers only want to read about other white people. And that's not the case necessarily. But the way that the shelving practices are, it really makes it hard for them to even find Black books without having to go directly to that section. Mm-hmm. And do they even know that that section exists? So that's one of the things that I think is a really unfortunate way that a lot of our books are not seen. And so that impacts the sales. Right? That impacts the visibility and the success of the book. And what ends up happening is now the bookstore thinks, oh, I'm not going to order any more of these books because no one's buying them. They're not getting the same sales as these other ones. Mm-hmm. And no one realizes that it's because it's in this tiny section that is never seen by the majority of shoppers.
Yeah. Yeah. That impacts a lot of things. It's just kind of it's a problem. It probably needs to be addressed on multiple different levels, don't you think? I mean, not only from, as you mentioned, from a marketing standpoint, which is troubling and problematic on its own, but that's a great point.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I was so excited because one of the first bookstores that I ended up getting in, it was Hallmark. I couldn't believe it. So my mom and I ended up doing a road trip And, you know, I had my little list of the locations that my books were in. And we drove to all these places. I mean, Atlanta to Connecticut, like we were all over. And I popped in each store and I didn't say anything. I just went in and I decided, let me try to find my book, you know, by myself, wandered around. And I'll tell you that with the exception of one of those bookstores, all of the other, well, I shouldn't say bookstore, but one of those locations, I couldn't find the books. I could not find my books. And I had to go and say, hey, do you know where your African-American book section is? And it seems, you know, do you know where your African-American book section is? And they didn't know. I had to wander around the store because this was something new that they were doing, right? They told me they were doing a test. They wanted to test putting these books in their stores. And so I had to wander around the store and guess where I found these books? They were on the lower, the absolute bottom shelf and kind of surrounded by stuffed toys. And so there was no way that anyone would see them. And I'm like, this is a horrible test. You know, if you're testing the market and you're putting these books all the way at the bottom shelf and no one even knows that they're here, including the person that's at the front desk, then of course this is going to fail. Of course you're going to think that these books don't sell because you're not even presenting them the way that you would present your other books. So it's very disheartening. And I think we just need to have a lot more conversations about how to really do this and how to, again, desegregate the stores so that, you know, all of the titles are integrated.
Well, that sounds like an important step. And I think, you know, you've probably seen some big changes since 2018 in the industry as a whole. But yeah, we do need more diversity in literature. And of course, more people of color in publishing, right? And these are some things that you've spoken about at length. But where do you go from here?
Well, you know, I feel like one of the things that's important is just for me to keep doing what I'm doing, which is one, continuing to publish the books that I'm publishing and really putting in the work to make sure that they get seen so that I can be successful and so that, you know, these books can be out there because it's important for me for kids to be able to access the types of books that I'm writing. Mm-hmm. But then I also think it's important to just make sure that I'm helping create more diverse authors. And that's why it's so important to me to be able to teach other underrepresented, marginalized authors or aspiring authors, one, that they can actually publish a book, right? Yeah. And two, that they can be successful with it. And so I think that that fulfills a part of the pipeline, right? Like the front end of it. But on the back end, that's where we still have some difficulties. So the books are now being created, but how do we get those books sales? How do we teach people that these books are not just for Black children, that all children need to be exposed to books with characters that don't look like them? Yeah. How do we teach people that? You know, I've read articles about people gifting non-Black people a book with a Black character and them kind of looking at them like they were crazy, like, you do know my child is white, right? Mm. You know, because it doesn't seem right. I was at a show once because I used to sell at a lot of events, and I was at a show. I saw a cute little white family, two kids and a dad, and the kids saw my books lined up on the table and they're like, daddy, daddy. And they start pulling him over towards the table. And I saw him look at the books and kind of, you know, I guess in his mind, he's like, oh, wait, those aren't for my kids, and pulled them in the opposite direction. So, you know, and I don't, you know, there's no judgment. It's, you know, people aren't trained or taught that, hey, you know, all books are for everyone. You know, you see a Black character, you see a Black business and you think, oh, their stuff is for Black people. So that's a huge, huge difficulty in being able to sell. You know, it's just getting parents to buy books with these characters that look different from their children. teach their children to appreciate all different colors and cultures. Yeah. Another thing is just the schools and organizations. We really need them to start bringing in diverse authors. And I'm not just talking about for Black History Month. Like, this is a thing that really irks me, because on one hand, it's like, I appreciate you thinking of us, you know, during this time, but why can't we not be considered throughout the year? Why can we only come in for your diversity programs? Mm-hmm. You know, and that is, you know, similar to what I said before, we're in the diversity section. We write diversity books. We come in for diversity programs. Like, we authors need to be coming in at all times, and they need to be going to all types of different schools, because kids of diverse backgrounds don't typically get to see an author who looks like them. And that was my life story. And that means that they don't typically strive to become an author, you know, because you can't be what you can't see. So now you've got a continuation of diverse authors being created, you know, from the time that they're children.
Amazing. Yeah. Very important.
Yeah. There are just so many different things. And then, of course, we know that the publishing companies themselves, you know, strongly lack diversity. Yeah. in a major way. And it's something that we know. And I think that publishing companies are struggling to figure out, okay, well, how do we get a more diverse staff? Yeah. But, you know, I mean, you can bring in some freelancers, you can bring in people part-time for little projects, at least just to check out some of the books, because there have been so many books that have been published that had to be removed from the market because they were actually filled with racially charged stereotypes and language, and no one realized it because everyone there looked, you know, the same way. Mm-hmm. So they weren't diverse enough to be able to realize, you know, when something is wrong, because they don't have that perspective of the book's target audience. So there are so many different ways. And then, of course, back to what I said about the bookstores and retailers to begin with. You know, making sure that they're ordering more books by diverse authors, and then making sure that those titles are being integrated, you know, and simply arranged by genre and not by race.
Yeah, I think those are all really, really important pieces of the puzzle. I will link to the nonprofit We Need Diverse Books, which advocates essential changes in the publishing industry to produce and promote literature that reflects and honors the lives of all young people, as you mentioned, and then People of Color in Publishing, which is supporting, empowering, uplifting racially and ethnically marginalized members throughout the industry, doing some good work there. But yeah, it is figuring out that, you know, how those company cultures can shift. I think now more than ever is the time for everybody to really, you know, self-reflect, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, now is a great time. And there's so many more books on the market, you know, that any type of book that you're interested in, you can find that book written by a diverse author. If you're into fantasy or, you know, romance, or you're looking for children's books, you can find whatever you're looking for. You just have to put in a little bit more work, unfortunately, because the books aren't as visible. But I definitely encourage people to start checking out the diverse authors.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I've spoken with a handful of authors recently, and I think Professor Christopher Chambers mentioned that, you know, there's never been a better time for authors of color. There's kind of a renaissance happening right now. So you're kind of right there in the, at a really opportune time, I think. Where do you want to point listeners to connect with you on just, you know, kind of that building their own writing career piece? I know you've got some courses out there. You have a course titled Self-Published Like a Pro. Is that still something you want?
Yes. Yes, yes. So I have all of the information, all of my courses are at my website, which is publishwithcrystal.com. And I also run a Facebook group, which is 5,000 strong, which I'm so excited about. And it's called Six Figure Self-Publishing Secrets with Crystal Swain Bates.
Fantastic. Before we wrap up here, you know, we haven't really talked about your own kind of writing process, but yeah, if you want, just kind of, give us a sample of like your most productive writing day.
Wow. Well, you know, it's actually a writing night. I love to write overnight because it's so quiet. So usually my household is quiet, no notifications on my phone. So sometime after midnight, wow. I will just sit down and literally go through line by line and write. And I can usually write pretty quickly for a portion of the book. And then what happens is I get stuck. And because I typically write in rhyme, and I like for my rhyme, I mean, I want my meter to be perfect. I don't want any false rhymes, you know, so it takes quite a lot of time and it makes my life a lot harder. But I will literally sit here and what I do is I kind of go da 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 da. Okay, my next line needs to be like that. Da 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 da. So you would hear me and you would think I was recording some sort of a, you know, making some music in here. But that's literally my process for writing my children's books. I'm in here making noise. I'm snapping my fingers and I keep going until I'm done. So sometimes you never feel like you're done. But, you know, I'll read what I've written, see how I feel about it and just kind of keep going. But the process itself is quick. It's just the finalizing and the fine tuning that takes quite a while for me to actually be happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you find an illustrator that you really connected with?
Well, I spent a lot of money on horrible illustrators. So what I always do is I do tests. Even now, if I'm looking for a new illustrator, I have every illustrator do a test and I'll usually test, you know, three or four people at once. And I'll tell them what I want the character to look like. And then I'll look and see what they do. And then I'll make my adjustments. And then I'll look and see what it looks like. And that's really it. I mean, because the characters are such an important part of the process, I was very lucky to have found the illustrators that I use pretty early on in the process. Mm-hmm. But that was after wasting money, you know, on a lot of other ones that I tested out. Wow. But I think it's important because I see a lot of authors and their illustrations are lacking. And you don't have to have $1 million budget to hire an illustrator. But you do have to realize that you don't have to accept that first person's work. You know, if the person has drawn something for you and you're kind of like, you know, you don't want it to be good, just good enough. You want it to be something that kids will really like to just stare at. You know, you want kids to make your book a repeat when it comes to the bedtime story. So I'm so glad that I kind of figured out a strategy of testing them out before I hired them to do the full job. Yeah, it's worked out very well.
That's wise. I think that's some good advice. And yeah, before we wrap up here with just kind of your advice to your fellow scribes on how to keep going in this very interesting time in history. I will point at all the places, of course, we'll drop all the links to publishwithcrystal.com, your other home base there, your author page, Crystal, SwainBates.com, and your publishing website as well. And you are on Twitter, and of course, I'll link to that great Facebook group. Is there anywhere else you wanted to point listeners?
I think that you've got it covered. Yeah, okay. That's perfect. And I guess my last word will be to anyone that is getting stuck or needs some encouragement, what always works for me is to remember my why. And if you take a post-it note and you write that why down on it and just stick it on your laptop, you will always be reminded of why you're writing. And no matter what's going on in the world, no matter how crazy things get and how many distractions there are, you'll always be able to get centered because you'll remember exactly why you're doing this in the first place.
Thank you for your time and for your wisdom. Crystal is filling diversity gaps in children's literature and a lot more, it would seem. Yeah, kudos on the work and congratulations on your successes and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much for having me on. I love these types of conversations, so I'm really glad to be able to contribute.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.